This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
And this week we're on episode 43.
And we are, I'm not going to say it's a crazy high number.
So proud of you.
This week we are discussing the Watts family murders.
Yes. And y'all probably already know this case like the back of your hand, because when it happened, everyone and their mother was talking about this case.
But, you know, I thought I knew everything about it, and like researching it,
yeah,
there was a lot of crazy shit that I didn't know.
Same. There was a lot of crazy stuff. And now that like the full story is pretty much out there, I think it's going to be a lot easier to organize the information, because a lot of people are covering it as it was breaking too, because it was such a crazy case.
Definitely. And like, there's so much stuff on it. Like, even Dr. Phil did a podcast episode about it.
Yeah.
And that, like, obviously we're not going to be able to put everything into an episode.
Right.
But we tried to give you a lot. And we also wanted to say that this is a trigger warning episode. It does involve children's deaths if you didn't know the case.
Yeah. So just as a general warning, if that is upsetting, maybe skip out on this one, because it isn't super graphic for the most part, but there are light graphic moments because it is a murder.
Exactly.
Yeah. But before we actually get down into the case, do you want to tell me what you're binging this week, Sarah?
So my binge is really simple this week. It is an alcoholic beverage.
Nice.
And it's something that within the last couple months, I realized that like, I had legitimately never ordered it out before.
Okay.
And I just started ordering it, and now it's my go-to drink, and it's just a Captain and Coke.
Yeah.
Like, I used to drink just vodka or, like, mojitos, Moscow mules, like, mostly vodka or rum-based drinks. I never drank, like, dark liquor.
Yeah.
And one day I was like, you know what? I'm gonna try it, and I fucking love it. And
isn't Captain Morgan dark rum?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like I never drank it before. And
oh,
now I'm drinking
okay.
It.
Sorry. I misunderstood you.
You're good. So, yeah, it's just Captain and Coke. It's a little bit sweeter than like the vodka drinks I used to do.
Right.
And like it goes down easy and it's simple, classic.
Yeah.
And I love it.
I know. I think you ordered one the other day and I was like, why did you order that?
Yeah. And I can drink like five of them.
Well, that's probably not good.
I'm not saying I'm driving.
I'm saying the easier they go down, the more fucked up you're going to be. And you and I can't handle our liquor.
You're not wrong. But that is my binge. So what are you binging?
So my binge this week is kind of weird, but it's not for the reason you think it would be. So my binge this week is spin class at the gym.
Okay.
And
Still hasn't invited me to yet, even though we go to the gym 3 times a week together.
Because it's at like 9 a.m. on the weekends and you're usually not up. So I haven't invited you.
Sometimes I'll be up.
But I've been going, like, I usually only go on like a Saturday or Sunday. And because we don't do a lot of cardio, it's just like how I've been getting my cardio, basically. Nice. And I've tried spin classes before at like places that just do spin. And it was terrible. Just the worst thing I've ever done. I was like, I'm never going to walk again. But this one I can like complete and my butt's only a little sore.
Wow.
But that's not even why I'm binging it. We go to a gym in a pretty elderly neighborhood, I would say.
Yes.
So spin class this weekend, when I went to sign up the morning of, there's usually plenty of spots available because it's like a 40 bike class.
Mm-hmm.
And there were only 2 seats available.
Wow.
So the entire classroom was full and I was literally the only person under the age of 50 in the class. And there were just so many wonderful things that happened during spin class that I wrote them down.
Yes.
And this happens like every time, just something absurd. When we went to spin class, it was 55 degrees outside. One of the women in the class came in wearing 3 different jackets, and her outermost jacket was a big puffy jacket.
Yes, me. Me.
It's not that cold. It doesn't warrant that. And then there was a lady who, you like add gear to your bike to increase resistance, and they'll be like, you're riding up a hill in mud, so put your resistance on like 20. And so your bike can barely move, right?
Yeah.
And this lady is in the corner just like spinning as fast as she can the entire time and looking at everyone like, why are you struggling? Why are you so sweaty? And I was like, if this lady doesn't put on a fucking gear in a second. And then my final one was just that one of our cool down songs was To the Window, To the Wall.
Yes.
And I'm like singing along with this song, like surrounded by 50-year-old men and women.
I love it.
Just very fun. It's very upbeat. It's way out of my comfort zone usually, but it's very fun. And I love people watching, and it's a great place to people watch.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's my binge this week because it was just so silly.
I like that you're doing that. And maybe one time I'll join.
We can go tomorrow. Class at 5:30.
Oh, shit. We could.
Just saying. But should we get into our case today?
I think we should. Are you going to tell me a little bit about Mr. Christopher Watts?
I'm going to give you a little rundown.
Okay.
It's like two sentences. We can make it through this. I promise.
But it's the next 12 pages. That,
you're not wrong. So Chris Watts is arguably one of the most famous family annihilators in recent times. This case took the country by storm as they were the picture-perfect family to the outside world, but inside their relationship and home, things were brewing that would result in the death of Chris's pregnant wife and two small children. Oh, do we want to give them our general warning about Chris?
Oh, Chris is a fucking douche knocker.
Yeah, we hate Chris, and we're not gonna be quiet about how much we hate Chris during this episode, most likely.
Yeah, we're not gonna be nice.
So just as a general warning, if we seem angry, it's because we are, because Chris is a bad person.
Exactly. So starting with the background, we're not gonna go into their childhoods. We're just gonna start with them meeting.
Yeah,
because that would be unnecessary. So there was Christopher Lee Watts, and his wife's name was Shanann Catherine Watts, and they met in 2010. Both of them were from North Carolina, and they met on social media when Chris sent her a friend request, and they kind of started talking, and they ended up going on a first date, and they hit it off. The first time that he sent her a friend request, though, she actually denied it as she had recently gotten divorced and was kind of in a dark area and was like, I'm not into this. But he sent her another one, which is a little weird. And she actually accepted it this time, which was the start of their romance. So they dated and they got married on November 3rd, 2012. The couple ended up having two daughters. The first one was Bella Marie, who was born December 17th, 2013, and Celeste Catherine, which they call Cece, and she was born on July 17th, 2015. And so at the time of the deaths, they were 4 and 3,
yeah.
Which we never wrote that down, so I wanted to say that.
Also, both of their birthdays are on the 17th, which is interesting.
It is. So having children was really exciting for this couple because Shanann had trouble getting pregnant, and so they had to use fertility treatments for this.
Yeah.
The couple then bought a home in 2013 in Frederick, Colorado. It was a beautiful,
yeah,
5-bedroom house. It was $500,000, and it was lavish AF.
Yeah, like it was, from what everyone knew they were making, they were like, this is a very lavish home.
Yeah. So they ended up moving to Colorado because they just went on a vacation there one time and they fell in love with it.
Yeah. Which they say you're never supposed to move to the place you fall in love with on vacation. But
really?
They had friends there, so that probably helped them like make that move, you know?
I feel like that's what every old person does to Sarasota, though.
Yeah, you're not wrong. So the couple filed for bankruptcy in 2015, largely due to medical bills for Shanann and the girls and credit card debt. The debt in total was almost $500,000, and $70,000 of it was for credit cards alone. So they were in deep in the debt.
Well, yeah, their house was worth $500,000.
Yeah, and the fertility treatments are not cheap. Like, all of those medical issues are stacking up, mm-hmm. You know? And Shanann also had some other medical issues. She was actually diagnosed with lupus before they met and possibly also had diabetes. And Chris was employed at Anadarko Petroleum. And I looked this up because I was like, that's a weird name for something. And apparently they do something called hydrocarbon exploration. And they were actually the subject in multiple environmental cases, including one of the largest environmental contamination settlements in American history, like oil spillages and things like that. They've been a part of.
Yeah.
So even his job was kind of scummy, you know, just as a side note. But his job did have hours that allowed him to be home by 3 p.m. every day, which is nice when your wife works at home with the kids.
Yeah, and you can be home for dinner and bedtime and everything. Yeah.
So Shanann actually worked for a company which is definitely supposed to be pronounced Level, but they're fancy and they pronounce it Laval. And she was selling a product called Thrive. And this is your typical multi-level marketing company, like Work It Works or Mary Kay. It's a pyramid scheme.
Exactly.
And she actually did really well with this, bringing in around $65,000 a year, and she was able to work from home.
Which is, like, a pretty good deal.
Yeah, for what you're doing, especially.
Yeah.
And at one point, she actually even made $80,000 for them because she got, like, a special vacation for that $80,000 amount.
Yeah, and I heard that she was, like, so good at it that she had like almost 100 people under her.
Wow, that's
crazy. That she had gotten to sell.
Yeah, wow, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
And when Shan started working there, actually, Chris began using the Thrive products and he lost 40 pounds like by doing this. He was like in the 200s and he was like 185 by the end of it. And this made him gain confidence in his appearance again because he was looking fit. As the Brits would say. I'm so sorry. But these new jobs gave the couple what felt like a fresh start. Shan became a huge seller in her company and got really popular on social media, too. She did Facebook Live a lot and had a pretty decent following. Like, I was listening to a podcast and they were playing, like, some of her Facebook Lives and stuff back. And she just loved it, it seemed like.
Yeah.
And Chris and Shanann, in general, were very into social media, like the majority of us nowadays. And everything they posted about their lives was picture perfect, like the majority of us nowadays. And she actually recorded herself giving Chris the third pregnancy test to tell him about their new baby. And it was being streamed on Facebook Live when he came home and she gave him the test.
Which, like, it's one thing if you videotape it and put it on Facebook later, but, like, streaming it live, you don't know what a reaction's gonna be.
There's so many possible outcomes to what could happen.
Oh, God.
And in the video, you can hear Chris. He is so dumbfounded that he asks what the pink lines mean on the test, and he said, does that mean it's a girl? And she's like, no, honey, like, that just means it's positive. And he just keeps going, oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. But it doesn't sound like it's awesome to him. Like, it's just very one note, like everything you hear from Chris.
Yes. So now this is when Shanann and the kids go missing, leading up to it. So Shanann was on a business trip in Phoenix, Arizona with her friend that she worked with named Nicole Atkinson. And Nicole Atkinson was the one who drove her home from the airport and dropped her off at home at about 1:48 a.m. on August 13th, 2018. And something that we didn't really write down is that her flight had been delayed.
Yeah.
She was actually supposed to be home at 11, but she ended up not getting home until around 2.
Right.
The Watts had a Ring camera on the front door, so she was caught on video taking her suitcase inside. And Nicole is actually seen waiting in her car until Shanann gets inside before leaving. Like a great friend.
Yeah, you need a friend like that. You a friend who does that.
Get you a Nicole because she's great.
Yeah, Nicole is great. She, from the start, is like, something is very wrong and I will get to the bottom of it.
Yes. So when Shanann arrived home, she was really tired. She didn't feel well. And she had made a doctor's appointment for the next day as she was 15 weeks pregnant at the time.
Yeah.
With a little boy that they were going to name Nico Lee Watts. And her due date was January 31st of 2019.
And she was super excited about that.
She definitely was. But the next day, Shanann never showed up to any of her appointments. She missed her gyno appointment. She missed a business meeting. And she wasn't answering her phone, returning texts, and there was no sort of presence on social media, which is very unlike her. Like, it was the first thing she did when she woke up.
Yeah.
And the last thing that she did before she went to sleep.
Especially if most of your business is through Facebook. Like, that's exactly how you sell a lot of that stuff.
And, like, Chris would say that, like, she wouldn't text him back, like, right away. She would get to her business and her social media stuff
right
before he would ever hear from her during the day.
Yeah, that was how they were making money, so she wasn't going to let it go.
Exactly. And her friend Nicole, the one that dropped her off the night before, was worried.
Yeah.
She hadn't heard from her at all, so she took her son with her and went over to Shanann's house around 12:10 p.m. and knocked on the doors. There was no answer. Nicole's son was able to stand on top of Nicole's car and see inside of those little garage windows, and he saw that Shanann's car was still in the garage. Shanann's car was also the only vehicle that the Watts had besides Chris's work truck, but this work truck was only to be used for him to go to and from work, and it had a GPS system inside to make sure that's all that happened.
Yeah, because you want to make sure your employees aren't putting miles on that truck that you don't need.
Exactly. And Nicole was able to actually peek in the front door, as they had one of those locks that you can just unlock with a code, and she had right the code to it. But when she opened it, they had a child lock on the door, which was kind of like one of those like chain locks in a hotel.
Yeah.
So she was only able to open the door like an inch. But when she opened it, she was able to see that the shoes that Shanann wore every day were still sitting by the front door. There were also other friends and family trying to reach out that were worried about her. A friend named Cassie was texting and calling friends, and then had called Chris trying to figure out where she was.
Right.
And Shanann's mom called the girls' school and found out that the girls had never actually made it to school that day, and this was supposed to be their first day back at school after summer break.
Yeah, so that's like an important day that you would probably be there for.
Right.
So, Nicole called the police at 11:40 a.m., and she explained the whole situation to them and asked that they come to do a welfare check, as Shanann was pregnant and had diabetes and lupus, so she was worried she may be unconscious or something may have happened to her at home. And an officer arrived at the home to do a welfare check around 1:40 p.m. They again opened the door, and they were only able to open it an inch. And the officer called inside the house to make his presence known. And the extra concerning part to him was that there was no noise coming from the house at all, which is weird because if there were small children there, there would be some kind of noise. Kids yep make noise constantly.
If they're crying, if they turned on the TV, yeah, anything.
So, let's see. Okay. So, Chris shows up because Nicole also called him to say the police were coming and he had to come open up the garage. He arrives there at around 2 p.m. When she calls, he tells her that Shan took the kids to a friend's house that morning after they talked about getting a divorce. Later, when questioned about this, the police ask what friend she was going to see, and he had no answer and wouldn't tell them, which is one of the red flags amongst a myriad of red flags that Chris right has. He has, like, a red tapestry, not a red flag.
He's a red cape.
Yes. And Nicole tells police that she knew the couple was having issues, but she wasn't aware that they were fully intent on separating until that morning when she called Chris to say, your wife is missing.
Yeah, especially because she was newly pregnant.
Yeah. And the officer actually also called and spoke with Chris, and he said that it rang so long that he thought he was going to get voicemail, but Chris eventually picks up. And he tells the officer the same story, that his wife was going to a friend's house. And he tells the police officer that the keypad on their garage is broken, so he has to wait for him to come home to let them in. So, when Chris arrives, he opens up the garage, goes inside, closing the door behind him, and then about a minute later, comes to open up the front door to the cop.
Which it shouldn't take a minute to get from the garage to the front door.
No.
But apparently he said that he like ran around really quickly to check to see if they were there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense for sure. And he had to go inside because that lock was there, so he couldn't let them in any other way, pretty much.
So police do a welfare check, and they were given permission to search the house, but none of the missing family were found. During the search, Shanann's purse was found, her wedding rings, and keys to the home. Her car, which was still in the garage, still had the children's car seats inside of them. And Chris is actually the one who found the wedding rings and her phone, which had been stuffed inside the cushions of the couch, like in between two cushions.
Yeah.
Which is like a weird place to just be like, oh, I'm going to check in the cushions.
Yeah. And it's also, it's kind of like when JonBenet's dad found her.
Mm-hmm.
It's like no one else can find this until you suddenly stumble upon it. It's like you knew it was there.
Exactly.
Because he did.
And when Chris finds the wedding rings, he's basically like, oh, well, she must have just left me. So that's it.
Makes sense.
Her clicker for the garage door was also found inside of her vehicle, making it seem very unlikely she would willingly leave the house with no way of getting back in.
Yeah.
And also that means that, like, she had no way to close the garage behind her if that's the way she went out because the keypad was broken.
Yeah, the officer was literally like, do you think that she pressed the button and ran under the door pregnant while holding two small children? He's like, that must have been what happened.
Right.
And he was like, but what? That doesn't make any sense.
So this is when everyone realizes that something is really wrong. At one point while questioning Chris, they found an inhaler and asked who in the house had asthma. And Chris responded that he didn't know, that he wasn't sure.
Yeah. This part was so infuriating.
And, you know, some people could see this as a sign that he was in shock that his family was gone. But in reality,
he was just the worst.
Exactly. Chris discussed with the officers ways of locating his missing family. And he remained calm throughout the whole situation and didn't even seem worried about his children being gone.
Yeah.
So the police officer asked Chris to give him a rundown of his morning. And this is the story that always changes.
Yeah.
So he starts off by saying that when Shanann got home, he's already asleep. But he wakes up at 5 a.m. to get ready for work. And before going to work, him and Shanann talked about getting separated, a topic that had been brought up between them before, and they were both emotional and crying. She said that when Shanann went back to sleep, he then backed his work truck into the garage to load up his tools and left for work.
Shanann's mother, who I believe her name is Sharon, had actually spoken to the officer on the scene and told him that she was convinced that Chris had something to do with the disappearance and that they needed to check his phone records and the GPS in his truck. And later on, she was like, if he killed them, then he disposed of their bodies with oil somehow, which is like super weird. Like, she just immediately was suspicious of him, which is awesome because a lot of the times it seems like in family annihilator cases, they're like, it couldn't be the husband, you know, because they just don't want it to be true.
Yeah. And like, she just had that gut feeling that, you know,
something was wrong.
You can't deny it.
Yeah. So when more police arrive to help search the house, they find that the couple's bed, which Shanann is known to make every day,
because she was very like anal, like everything was pristine and clean all the time.
People said like, it was strange that kids lived in their house because it was so clean all the time, type thing. And the bed was completely messed up. The comforter and sheets were stripped from the bed and they were on the floor. And the pillows were even thrown on the floor. And one of the sheets was missing. Chris tries to explain this away by suggesting that Shanann was in the process of washing the sheets, which she did a lot because she was a clean person.
And something that I didn't add in is that I guess after she took trips, she would frequently wash the sheets after she slept with them.
Oh, yeah.
To get home to, quote, get the airport off of her.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's just a weird thing. Like, why not just shower before going into bed?
Yeah, I've heard of people doing that, like showering as soon as they get home from the airport type thing, but never like changing all of your sheets. Then the Watts neighbor, Nathaniel, comes by to see what's going on, because all of a sudden his neighbor's house is surrounded by cop cars.
Exactly.
And when he finds out that Shanann and the girls are missing, he offers the police his security camera footage, because he has one camera outside of his house that's basically pointing directly at the Watts house, mm-hmm. which was very lucky.
Yeah, he knew they had some shit going
on. Yeah, he was ready for it. Apparently his packages were just being stolen, but good on you for getting one.
Right.
The police and Chris go over to the neighbor's house to check out the footage, and on the tapes they see Shanann being dropped off at 1:48 a.m. and then Chris's truck backing up into the garage at 5:27 a.m. Also, just to go back a little bit, he said that he woke up at 5 a.m., right, to get ready for work. And he had a conversation about getting divorced with her and then went to work all within 27 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You know, he's a guy. He just has to put on clothes and walk out the door.
That's true. Taylor does do that in order to go to work. Yeah, and I'm like, can you brush your teeth? And he's like, oh, yeah, I forgot. And then comes back and brushes his teeth.
Corey wakes up and is out the door, like, with packing lunch, getting dressed and everything, within 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Like,
honestly,
out of bed to out the door. Like, sometimes it's 15, but usually within 10 minutes.
It's impressive. You really don't have to worry about, like,
how you look.
That's true.
When
yeah.
you're a dude.
That is exactly what it is. So when he parked his car in the garage, he was there for about 20 minutes, and you can see him on the camera make 3 trips to his trunk of his truck. Is it still called a trunk in your truck?
It's called a bed.
A bed? Okay. To the bed of his truck. But the neighbor, Nathaniel, said that Chris never backs his truck up into the garage. And the friend, Nicole, confirms this. Like, pretty much everyone confirms this is weird.
Yeah.
And the neighbor also tells police that he had heard Chris yelling at Shanann multiple times.
And about the truck thing, like, because her Lexus was in the garage, he was only able to back the truck up just, like, not even halfway in.
Yeah, like, partially in.
Yeah, just enough to cover the back of the truck, basically.
Yeah, and he was, like, very visibly carrying 3 bags to the car.
So, more people, including the police, start picking up on the fact that Chris seems unaffected by all of this. And the only time that he seems even stressed out is when viewing the neighbor's security camera footage.
Yeah.
Nicole also said that Shanann was suspicious of Chris having an affair because while she was on this business trip, he was supposed to be at a baseball game with coworkers, and the charges on his car were unusually high because she did the finances.
Yeah.
And so she asked him about it, and he said that it had just gotten really expensive drinks and food at the game.
Right.
Which, I mean, I go to a Lightning game and it drinks $23.
Oh, yeah. No, it's still pretty expensive, but not a lavish dinner expensive. Yes.
But this had happened the Saturday before they went missing. And Shanann talked to some of the people at her business trip about this, including Nicole.
Yeah. And she said, like, she wasn't sure, but she suspected that he was being, what is that word? God damn it.
He was cheating.
He was cheating. What is...
I don't know. It's not...
I know. I'm trying to say infidelity, too.
Yeah.
Why are we so dumb? Why are we this way, Sarah?
Okay. So, even more officers come. And they want to do a full-blown search of the house, which Chris agrees to.
Yeah.
And he's welcome to be inside the house when they search, but he chooses to be outside and to stay on the porch, which he's never inside when they do any of the searching.
Yeah.
He's, like, uncomfortable.
And while he's doing that, like, a lot of officers come up to him and randomly start grilling him, like, with their body cams on, which is great.
But, again, nothing is found because the house is fucking pristine.
Yeah.
So the police are like, what about your finances? Have the cards been used?
Yeah.
So he does call the police, or he, wow, he doesn't call the police. He calls the banks to see if anything on the accounts were weird. And he also calls hospitals to see if they'll be there. But, you know, we all know he's just doing this for show for the cops.
Yeah.
Chris also says that it may be possible that Shanann was having an affair. But when asked if he was, he said, no, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Do you want to tell them about the weird thing about their accounts?
Sure. So because she does the finances.
Yeah.
He said that he doesn't know any of the usernames. He knows the passwords, but he doesn't know any of the usernames to their bank accounts. So he had to call them. And the second thing was when they found her phone, he didn't know the passcode to it.
Yeah.
But the friend Nicole did, because her password was her baby's due date and he didn't know it.
Yeah, like he just doesn't know so many standard things a husband should know.
Yeah, like he doesn't give a fuck about his wife.
Yeah, it's very strange. So the next day, Chris said that he was going to go into work because he just couldn't stand being alone in the house. And his work was like, no, dude, what the fuck? Stay home. Like,
yeah.
Look for your family. The FBI and Colorado Bureau investigation also joined the very next day, which is August 14th of 2018. And police were keeping 24-hour surveillance on the house in unmarked cars, so Chris had no idea that he was being watched.
Good.
In an attempt to find his family, and I emphasize find his family because bitch knows where his family is. Hate this guy. Sorry. Okay. So, in an attempt to find his family, Chris gave speeches to local Denver stations, KMGH-TV and KUSA-TV. And these were done outside of his house with him pleading for their safe return, which is standard in these kinds of cases. During these interviews, you can actually hear investigators with cadaver and search dogs in the background searching the property, which Chris had given them permission to do so. But it's just eerie, like, in the interviews to hear all of this going on behind them.
Mm-hmm. I watched the interview that he did with ABC7.
Yeah.
And, like, he's just emotionless the whole time. And it seems like he's just having conversation, giving straight facts.
Yeah. He doesn't ever seem like it's actually happening to him.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing he said besides times and facts is that if the kids are not someplace safe, that he wants them to come home. He kind of jokes about it being weird that they weren't there to eat dinner and to tell them that they won't get dessert if they don't finish their dinner. And he talked about how last night was hard for him. And everything was just centered on how he felt about the situation, not like what was going on. Basically, like, he didn't seem to actually care what was going on. It was just about him.
And there was a quote that he said, like, it was just one part.
Yeah.
Where he said, quote, I just want them back. I just want them back. And, like, laughs in between it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck?
It's like, and they say that you can't 100% rely on someone's emotions after a crime like this happens because everyone reacts differently.
Mm-hmm.
But he just seems so nonchalant about everything, and it's just very uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah.
And the interviewer asked Chris if they had gotten into an argument that night, and he responds by saying, it wasn't an argument, but we had an emotional conversation, and I'll leave it at that. And both cadaver dogs actually gave alert to Chris's work truck, saying that the missing girl's scents were in his work truck, which, no one is allowed in but Chris, and his girl should never have been in his truck. So,
yeah,
another weird thing.
It's full of sharp, dangerous tools.
Yeah.
Like, it has a GPS. Like, they could not be in it.
Yeah.
So, investigators finally start looking into Chris due to his strange behavior. And they take his phone and they look at his phone records. So, they discover that he had, in fact, been having an affair with one of his coworkers.
They always are.
Mm-hmm. So he was having an affair with a woman named Nicole Kessinger, which this is a different Nicole from Shanann's friend.
Just to make things even more confusing for you.
Right? That was Nicole Atkinson. This is Nicole Kessinger.
Okay.
So Nicole Kessinger actually went down to the police station that day to identify herself and said that her and Chris had been in constant contact in the 6 weeks leading up to the disappearance.
Which, like, is really only a month and a half of time.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just want to make sure that it's not as unreasonable as it sounds in my head. But it is. It's crazy.
So Nicole told the police officers that Chris said that he and Shanann were putting their house up for sale, that they had agreed on 50-50 custody of the girls, and that him and Nicole had spent time planning their lives together.
Yeah.
And Chris said that he wanted to get a two-bedroom apartment with her, and they had even looked at apartments together. Which I just want to point out that he wanted to get a two-bedroom apartment even though he was about to have three kids.
Yeah.
And they were going to share 50-50 custody.
Yes.
Kind of weird.
They're all going to sleep in the same room, Sarah.
Yeah.
Duh.
So this relationship seemed like it was getting pretty serious with Nicole's claims. But in text, police found... In the text police found from her, she was texting a friend named Charlotte saying that things were pretty new and not all that serious. Would you like to tell the people what said to Charlotte?
So Nicole texts Charlotte about her new relationship and says a real graphic thing that I was like, why is she saying this? But she texted her saying, I finally found a man who likes and wants to eat pussy.
Which, I mean, good for you, but that's not something I text to my friend.
Right, and her friend literally responded like, nice, where'd you meet this guy? And she responded with more things about how much she loved that he liked to eat her pussy. And she said the term pussy. It was just too much. Like, if I were to text you about something like that, I'd be like, he likes to go down on me or something like that. Yeah. I wouldn't be like, he likes to eat my pussy.
See, I would get...
I hated saying that and looking at you. I'm so sorry.
If I were ever going to say something like that to you, especially over text.
Yeah.
I feel like I would get, just to make it even more awkward, like specifically professional about it and be like, he enjoys performing cunnilingus on me, because that's just who I am.
That's also like the funnier way to say it. Exactly. You know? It was just, she came out real hot and then she said, but things aren't that serious. We're still pretty new. Like, it's nothing that crazy.
Yeah.
But like, you guys are planning to move in with each other and you're going to leave your wife for her.
Exactly.
It's very strange.
So during Nicole's interview, she says that she actually went to his house before, and everything that they own was, like, outside of their means, including the car that they shared, which was a Lexus.
Yeah.
But I also heard that Thrive paid for the car.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. They also paid for them to go on, like, an all-expense-paid vacation together, much like Mary Kay does. So
exactly.
That makes sense.
Chris had told her for the first time that he loved her on August 1st, just a couple, like, 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
And that... She said that they had a great sex life and they last had sex on August 11th, which was 2 days before the disappearance.
Yeah.
So before her business trip, Shanann and the girls had actually been on a trip to visit Shanann's family in North Carolina for 5 weeks prior to the disappearance. And every time Chris told Shanann he was out with friends, he was with Nicole.
Yeah.
When Shanann was in North Carolina, her and Chris would literally only text, and they spent the whole time arguing, talking about their relationship and what to do about the pregnancy and having a third child. And because Chris seemed like he didn't really want to have this kid, Shanann ended up canceling the gender reveal party that they were planning on having.
Which is so sad because, like, all Shanann really wanted in life was a family, and she had already invited friends to this gender reveal party and had to cancel it. It wasn't like they had just briefly talked about it.
Yeah.
Also, while she was on vacation in North Carolina visiting her family, that's when Nicole came over and was like at her house too.
He was also texting Nicole throughout the day of the 13th, which is the day of the disappearance. But he didn't say anything to her about the girls being missing until 3:45 p.m., even though they were texting the whole day.
Yeah.
And Nicole said that, like, she was even worried about the girls after all this.
Right.
But turns out later, this is all fucking bullshit, because this is all we're really going to say about Nicole.
Yeah.
So this is all bullshit. And she told Chris that he should pawn off Shanann's wedding rings. And then the next day, they take her Google history and her phone history.
Yeah.
She spent 4 consecutive hours online Googling Shanann and her disappearance and then deleted her search history.
Yeah.
And she did that like 4 more times. And she Googled like, can police get texts off your phone that you've deleted? And like just she deleted everything and Googled all the stupidest shit.
Yeah, like they always do because they're idiots.
Yes.
So the next day, the police did yet another search of the house. This time, they confiscated electronics, some books, pillowcases, and a sheet that was found in the kitchen's trash can.
Weird place for a sheet, Chris.
For real. That evening, Chris actually had dinner with his neighbors, Nathaniel and all them, who offered to let him spend the night so he wouldn't have to be alone because he said the night before was really tough on him. Police called him and asked if he would be able to come down for a little talk. So the couple drove him there and they just like waited in the lobby for him, like when your parents take you to the doctor's office or something.
Right.
And during the questioning, they ask if they can search his house again with an even bigger crew, to which he agrees. They also ask him, like, where are you staying tonight? And he responds, a friend's house. And the interviewer asks, are they yours and Shan's friends or yours and Nicole's friends? And the interviewer actually fucked up really bad asking this question because they weren't supposed to know about Nicole yet. And when this happened, I was very confused, but because I'm not sure like how it didn't tip Chris off.
Yeah, but
that they
didn't.
Knew, but it didn't because he's a fucking moron. And the only thing I can imagine to give him any credit is that he was maybe thinking that they were talking about the other Nicole who
yeah.
had called the police because she was so prevalent in the case right now.
Too many Nicoles.
Too many Nicoles. And during this interview, an impromptu interview, they grill him pretty hard. And whenever he is talking about his family, he refers to them in the past tense. Like he already knows that they're gone. It's very uncomfortable. And he is asked repeatedly if him or his wife has ever had an affair. And he swears up and down that they haven't. And mind you, this is after the cop already literally asked him if he was staying with his lover's friends. Like, yeah. This is just how dense he is. After some more harsh questioning, the police tell him that they would like to do a polygraph test the next day just to confirm some things. And he said, sure, he agreed to it. And then his neighbors, who waited there the entire time, drove him back to their place where he spent the night in one room away from their 5-year-old daughter. It was also discovered that the girls' school was very expensive and they were supposed to pay $500 that day on their first day of school, like a deposit. Chris also only had $1,500 to his name. And the girls each had $20,000 life insurance policies. And Shan had a $50,000 to $100,000 policy. And another weird thing that happened on this day, because this day is closing out, is a psychic named Diana Roberts called in a phone tip early on in this investigation. And she said that she had a vision of the couple arguing between 2 to 5 a.m., in the morning over an extramarital affair. She felt that Chris had strangled Shanann and suffocated the daughters. She said that she had this inexplicable feeling that the girls were in some type of bag or trapped in water and couldn't breathe. I don't know. That, like, doesn't have any basis in reality, but it's still really interesting that she called.
Yeah.
And, like, gave that tip, and it's pretty much exactly what was happening.
Just 2 days after his family's disappearance, Chris was given a polygraph test and failed.
Yeah.
Which, we know this technically doesn't mean anything, but, you know, it's not a good look for you.
It's really not a good look.
when he came in for the polygraph test, he also wasn't wearing his wedding ring.
He already took it off.
Which is bizarre.
Yeah.
He did say that the only things missing from the house were the girls' blankies that they took everywhere. His story had changed a little bit from the day before, like changing the times that they were talking and that he got ready. But he gave a full account of his day and the places where he went to work.
Yeah.
And the questions that were asked during the lie detector test where he was lying were, did you physically cause Shanann's disappearance? He said no. Are you lying about the last time you saw Shanann? He answered no. And do you know where Shanann is now? And he answered no.
Yeah. So all things that he should definitely be saying yes to or, you know, not lie about. And I listened to a lot of the polygraph interview, and I don't know if I'm just dumb, but it was really interesting to listen to because the polygrapher basically re-interviews him about his entire day before they actually go into the questions. And then she asks him these direct questions where is like the whole time she's being like, hey, man, like, do you really want to lie to me? Like, you wouldn't lie to me, right? And then she goes into these questions. And it was just really interesting because I had never actually seen a true polygraph test before other than, like, the YouTube ones that are like, I took a polygraph test for views. So I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I had seen that the reason why they do that and they do, like, the pre-interview is so that way there is no, like, surprising questions that would cause your, like, blood pressure to rise or anything because you weren't expecting it.
And she was like, a lot of people think this test is based off just being anxious, and it's not. It's based on if you're lying to me or not. And she was, like, it was so funny. She was so fucking sassy with him. I loved it.
That's awesome. So after he's told he failed the polygraph test, he then comes clean about his own affair. And he goes, well, that's the thing that I was lying about. And I don't know where the girls are. Even though this test asked nothing about his fidelity to Shanann. And, like, the police already knew about Nicole.
Yeah. But he didn't know that yet, did he?
No.
Okay.
So, when he fails, the polygrapher walks in and goes, well, you already know you failed, so why don't you tell me the truth now?
It was so hardcore. She was so cool.
So he continues to deny it for a while before conceding that he was just trying to hide the affair. And it turns out that he had cheated on Shanann before with a woman that he met on Tinder. A woman named Amanda McCain came forward to tell the police about a weird one-night stand that she had with Chris 3 months prior to him getting with Nicole. She said that they met in a parking lot in front of a Chick-fil-A.
Pure romance.
The Lord's chicken. And then they went back to her place. But she said that he started getting really rough with her and was pulling her hair and putting his hands around her neck. And he tried doing anal with her and she physically had to push him off because he wasn't listening to her saying no.
Yeah. And she said, like, it seemed like he was trying to play out, like, a rape fantasy of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
So police kept asking Chris about if he knew where the girls were and told him that he should just come clean. And they also said his story wasn't making any sense. Chris told them that he knew it wasn't making sense, but he didn't do anything to those kids or her.
Quote, those kids.
Yeah. Your children, yeah. Sir. The police even tried to get him to come clean by kind of giving him a way out of the situation by asking if it was an accident. And Chris still denied everything. And they always do that. They're like, did you get mad, buddy? And you accidentally killed her? Like, the police also asked him about the conversation that Chris said that he and Shanann had before he went to work that day and said that they didn't believe that the both of them had gotten emotional during it because he has not shed a single tear since the girls went missing.
Yeah, they basically called him out and they were like, no, you're pretty much a sociopath. You're not crying now. You definitely didn't cry then.
Yeah. I love that they did that too. Mm-hmm. The whole time you're listening to the people like interrogate him, they're just shitting on him relentlessly, pretty much.
They're just calling him out.
Yeah. That afternoon, after the police kept interrogating him and trying to bring up scenarios that could have possibly happened, the police asked, well, did Shanann do something to the girls that you were helping to cover up? And after hearing this, he told the police he would be willing to talk if he could talk to his father first. I feel like that straight up gave him the idea.
Exactly. Like, he was like, oh, this is something I could run with that won't get me in as much trouble.
Exactly.
Let's talk to Dad.
Yeah.
Because Daddy knows best.
Exactly. Dad can get me out of this. So the police officer said that if they brought his father in, that he would have to tell them everything, which Chris agrees to. So they bring in Chris's father, Ronnie.
And I heard that, like, he was wearing a shirt that said, like, world's best pawpaw on it. And, like, that the girls had given him and stuff.
That's fucked up, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you don't want your son to be a killer. So he truthfully probably thought it was a weird disappearance at this point, you know?
Exactly. And he just wanted his grandkids back.
Yeah. As soon as the father is brought in, they close the door to let the two have some alone time, but they do know that they are still being recorded. And you can kind of tell that in the recording of him confessing because he's speaking very quietly. And when he says big information, he like taps the table with his fist, which is really weird. But Chris confessed everything to his father, saying that he had killed his wife. He said that Shanann hurt the children, and he freaked out and hurt her in return. He first said that she had smothered them, and it quickly changed to that she strangled them. His dad asks, well, which one? And he eludes the question, saying, I freaked out and did the same fucking thing to her. Or same thing, yeah, same fucking thing to her. He said that when he came back upstairs from getting his stuff ready for the day, he saw Shanann on top of Cece. Chris said that he didn't really know what to do with the bodies, so he just got rid of them. His dad asks if Chris strangled Shanann, to which he responded, mm-hmm. Then he goes on to talk about his affair, and then said that he's never going to see the light again.
Which I said, no fucking shit. Again, also, still making everything about him like a goddamn sociopath.
Yeah. And he wasn't emotional the literal entire time he's telling his father about the deaths of his family, but he starts crying while talking about his reputation. He's like, what are people going to say about me, Dad? Like, a literal fucking child.
Yeah. So once the police come back in, Chris starts telling them in more detail what he told his father, that once he came back up from downstairs, he saw Bella on the baby monitor sprawled out on her bed with the sheets off, and then on the monitor sees Shanann on top of Cece, so he runs in the room and Cece was blue, and then he said he choked Shanann. But he said that he felt horrible for what he did, and he couldn't look at her. He just couldn't bear it. So he dragged her body back to the bed and just covered her up with a sheet. He said that he never went to check on Bella or tried to perform CPR on Cece because he just knew they were dead.
Just knew it in his heart.
Yeah. Even though he never legitimately said he went into Bella's room to check on her.
He just saw her lying there.
Yes.
Right.
And was like, yeah, she's dead.
She's dead. Can't help her now.
So when the police then ask where the girls were, he says, they're gone and there's no bringing them back. So they ask again, this time saying, are the girls at the first place you went for work that morning? Which was Survey 319, which is an oil field. And Chris says, yes, they're right there off the site. So like when he's asked direct questions, he answers.
Yeah.
But if he's not, he just like makes shit up. When asked where the bodies were, his response was, I didn't know what to do. So again, the police have to ask the same question in a different way and ask, are they in something or are they underground? Chris is quiet for a minute and then started to cry and said that he didn't want them to think less of him.
Again, not the right thing to be crying over.
So when asked if Chris would take the investigators to the bodies, he said there was no way he was going back there. And he also said that he didn't want any of his coworkers to go out to the site with the investigators to help recover the bodies, because then they will question him and think less of him. He did say that he had thrown the girls' bodies into the backseat of his truck to transport them to the oil field.
Interesting. I also find it interesting that his initial story is like, she was so mad that I wanted to get a divorce that she murdered our children just as a way to get back at us, so I murdered her.
Yeah.
Like, that just doesn't make any sense.
No. I mean, I get, like, defending your children and, like, stopping her.
Yeah, but, like...
He was just in such a rage, Morgan.
It's just such a dumb story to say that your wife was so upset that you wanted a divorce that she would murder her own children that she pushed out of her fucking vagina.
That she is, like...
That she wants, in basically. Love with. Yeah. Like, she doesn't give a fuck about you at this point. She just wants those kids.
Exactly.
Like, it's just, ugh, he's so stupid. So, the police leave him alone with his dad again, and Chris says, I don't know if they believe me, and why would this happen to me? The answer is because you fucking did this to yourself, Chris. Yeah.
And again, all about him.
All about him. He's such a narcissist.
Why would
it's
this
incredible.
Happen to me?
It's because I murdered someone, but why would they be mad at me?
Right?
His dad asks if the girls were buried, and Chris's response is shenanigans. So he's even cryptic with his dad. It's like, yes. Just fucking tell us already. You've already admitted it. His dad is like, okay, can you, like, tell me about Bella and Cece, though? And Chris says, that's the part I feel horrible about. They are in an oil tank. I didn't know what else to do. The two then spend some time talking a lot of shit about Shanann, with Ronnie saying, your mother always thought that she was a narcissist, bipolar, unstable person. Sounds like you're talking about your own son there, but okay.
Right.
The police then come back with a photo of the oil site and ask Chris to point out where they are buried. He then proceeds to draw an S, B, and C on the photo, indicating that Shanann was buried in the ground and that Bella and Cece were in their own oil tanks. Police kept asking Chris to repeat his story, and every time it would change just a little bit, which happens when you lie. Your story's always going to change.
Yep.
After Chris took care of the bodies, he then called and texted Shanann's phone.
To give himself an alibi.
Yeah. He then called the children's school, saying that they were moving out of the district and that they would no longer be attending the school.
Yeah, on the first day. So, shortly after this, investigators found the bodies of Shanann, Bella, and Cece, and they were right where Chris said they would be. They were at the Anadarko Petroleum site, with Shanann being Shanann being buried in a shallow grave in the front of the oil tanks, and the two girls' bodies were in fact found inside of the oil tanks. The site was about 60 miles away from their family home. Putting the girls in their own oil tanks meant that he had to carry each of the girls up two stories to the top of the barrel and stuff their bodies inside of the 8-inch opening at the top. Which, an 8-inch opening is like the size of a dinner plate.
Yeah.
And you're putting a body in it.
You're putting a child in it.
And it's later discovered that one of his daughters was 9.5 inches wide, so he, like, had to physically shove them in there.
Yeah. And what I don't understand even further is why they had to go in separate oil tanks.
Yeah, because an oil tank is huge.
Yeah, and, like, you're going to murder your daughters and then also separate them in their death. Like, yeah. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So, he did say that the girls were missing some toys and blankets.
Yeah.
Before, and they were never found. He said that he had put them next to Shanann's grave, but they must have blown away.
Okay.
But two black trash bags that were empty were found at Shanann's grave, which they didn't blow away.
Yeah.
But okay. The sheet that Shanann's body was wrapped in had part of it, like, sticking up out of the ground and was kind of flapping around in the wind. And the sheet matched the pattern of the sheets that they found in the garbage can at the home. So, the police start uncovering her body.
Yeah.
She was buried only about 18 inches underground. She was lying face down with her knees curled under her and her arms stretched upwards. Her head was facing to the side. Which the podcast I was listening to said this, mm-hmm. like, to picture it, it's really similar to, like, child's pose.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing.
She was buried wearing a t-shirt, bra, and underwear, and she still had all of her makeup on. The sheet that she was wrapped in was unfortunately covered in blood, as she had miscarried their son after she died.
Yeah, which is fucking terrible. And that sheet was also, like, actually blowing around, and they were able to find that, too. So I don't know what would have happened to all of those toys and his children's blankets, but yeah. Okay. Police then move on to the oil tanks, where Chris said the girls were. The police were shocked that the girls would even be able to fit down the hole, as they were having trouble getting their arms down into it. But there was blonde hair stuck in the hatch of one of the oil tanks. Chris said that he was able to get the girls in the holes by putting them in feet first and having their arms up above their heads. Police had to get the girls out of the oil tanks by draining them completely and going in through a larger door at the bottom. The first tank took 6 hours to drain. When it was empty, they discovered Cece's body covered in crude oil, still wearing her nightgown and pull-up. And this part's really graphic, so skip ahead 15 seconds if you don't want to hear it. Okay. So the oil started decomposing her body so badly that when they tried to pull her body out of the tank, her skin started slipping off of her. And this happened with her sister, too.
Yeah, which this is a common thing that happens during decomposition, but usually yeah, not as quickly.
Not that quickly. And they, like, had to be really, really careful moving the bodies so they wouldn't disturb them that much. Mm-hmm. The second tank was then drained, and Bella's body was inside, still wearing the shorts and shirt that she went to bed in the night before.
On August 21st, so just a couple days later,
yeah,
Chris was officially charged with his family's murders. On September 1st, 2018, Shanann's parents and brother held a funeral for Shanann and the girls at a Catholic church in Pinehurst, North Carolina.
It's nice that they were able to still have a funeral.
Mm-hmm. Hundreds of people came to pay their respects, and thousands more watched as the funeral was live streamed on Facebook.
That's really nice.
Which is, like, very suitable for Shanann, as her yeah, whole life was Facebook.
Exactly.
In November 2018, Chris's story changed yet again, and he confessed to killing both his wife and his daughters.
Finally.
But didn't really give a full confession. He just confessed yeah, to that. So he pled guilty to all 9 counts against him, which there were 5 counts of first-degree murder, and he got 2 extra ones since each of his children were under the age of 12.
Nice.
1 count of unlawful termination of a pregnancy, and 3 counts of tampering with a deceased human body. He ended up being sentenced to 5 life sentences, 3 of them consecutive and 2 concurrent for the murders, plus a total of 84 more years for the other crimes.
And no possibility of parole, obviously.
Yes, thank God.
So, later on, in February of 2019...
So, like, 6 months later.
Yeah. He finally tells the story of what actually happened. And here's the thing. He could also be fucking lying here because he's just a liar. Yes. But here is what he finally said happened. He said that the morning that he killed them, the two had sex when Shanann got home from the airport. And then they fell asleep and he woke her up to talk to her later when he got ready for work. He had something to say to her, so he straddled her for about 20 minutes to talk. Even though Shanann said that he was hurting the baby. So he was just, like, sitting on her stomach.
Yeah, which is really weird because, you know, like, women do that, but guys don't normally
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, it seems weird.
But he obviously, like, wanted to be in a position of control from the get-go.
Right, exactly. Shanann asked if Chris was having an affair, and he denied it, but said that their marriage wasn't working anymore. He starts getting mean and tells Shanann that he doesn't love her, and she tells him to get off of her and that he is never going to see the kids again. He started going into a rage and snapped. While still straddling his wife, he started strangling her. He said that Shanann didn't scream or try to fight back, but that she laid there praying while he killed her. And this is when Bella walked into the room and asked what was wrong with Mommy.
Which is so sad. And again, Bella is the 4-year-old and Cece is the 3-year-old.
Yeah. So she's old enough to understand something's not right.
Yes.
He told Bella that Mommy didn't feel good. He wrapped Shanann up in the sheet, face down, and dragged her body upstairs. The whole time, Bella is literally watching him do this. This woke Cece up, so he picked up his lunchbox and put it in the truck before loading the girls into the truck with their dead mother.
Which, like, he purposely grabbed his lunchbox.
Yeah. He still had to go to work that day to make it believable.
Very true. Couldn't be hungry.
Yeah, exactly. He wrapped her head and feet in the trash bags so the girls didn't have to see their mother like that.
Even though, you know, she's just...
They just watch you carry her fucking body to the car, like...
Frustrating.
Yeah.
So, when he gets to the oil field, he takes Shanann's body and drags her onto the ground, or drags her on the ground, and the whole time, Bella and Cece are questioning what is happening. But he leaves her body where he was planning on burying her, and went back to the truck to the girls. Again, this is graphic.
Yeah.
So he then takes Cece's Yankees blanket, because they like the Yankees, and he wrapped it around her head. He puts one hand over her mouth and nose and starts strangling her with the other hand. Bella watched silently as he killed Cece. He then left Bella in the truck and took Cece's body to the oil tank and put her inside. He said that he had to manipulate her body to make it fit.
Yeah.
After closing the hatch, he heads back to the truck where Bella was. Bella asked what happened to Cece and if the same thing was going to happen to her. Which Chris says he doesn't remember what he told her to that question. But he used the same Yankees blanket and killed Bella in the same way. Bella's last words were, "Daddy, no." Bella kept fighting, though, trying to stay alive. Chris said that he heard Bella grunting while trying to breathe through the blanket, and she also had bite wounds on her tongue that occurred during the struggle. After she was dead, he did the same thing with her body and put it in the oil tank.
The fact that such a small girl knew something really bad was about to happen to her and struggled to fight is just so upsetting to think about. Like, it's, this case is just so upsetting. All family annihilator cases are, but like this one is particularly upsetting for some reason.
And I do, just like a personal thought, think that it's kind of weird that he killed the younger daughter first.
Yeah.
I would imagine that the older daughter would fight back more and kind of have more of a sense of what's happening.
Right.
So, like, I would imagine you would kill the older daughter first.
Yeah.
But
it is weird.
Just, yeah. Whoever was most accessible, I guess.
Yeah. So, Chris said that the girl's deaths were due to his anger against Shanann. Chris then dug the grave and buried her body in the shallow grave. And after the bodies were disposed of, Chris stopped and got a breakfast burrito from a gas station and then went back to work.
Because it makes you hungry.
Killing people.
And burying your family, apparently.
He was very concerned about all of his meals that
day. He was.
Because he also brought his fucking lunch. After being called home from the police, he stopped at a local construction site to throw away his clothes and the blanket that he used to kill the girls. And this was the end of his confession on what really happened. Again, if it's even the actual true version.
But it is the last confession that he has made.
Because, like, the police said that the way that Shanann's body was found is that it was likely she was asleep while being strangled because she didn't fight back. But he then compensates for that by saying she prayed while he was killing her type thing. So there, it's like hard.
There was something that I contemplated putting in there, but we've already been so graphic.
Yeah.
That he said that, like, while he was praying, she was staring up at him and, like, when you get strangled, a lot of times your eyes get really bloodshot and filled with blood. And he just watched his her eyes get filled with blood.
Jesus.
And I was like, that's just unnecessary detail. Like, he was one for very unnecessary details instead of, like, the facts that they needed.
Yeah.
He would give, like, random things that were just unnecessary. Yeah.
So, Chris is still spending his life in prison. He had to be transferred from Colorado to a prison in Wisconsin for his safety in December 2018, which is always very ironic when it's for their safety. And Shanann's parents filed a civil suit against Chris after he was arrested, and he has been instructed to give her parents, right?
Yes.
Okay. Her parents $6 million, which grows with 8% interest each year. He is charged $1 million for each of the deaths and $3 million for the emotional distress caused by these events. Her mother, Sandy, also had an interview with Dr. Phil where she said, "I think the hardest part is knowing our granddaughter watched her sister die and then begged for her life." Which I would agree. That is a very difficult part.
It is very sad. I did want to put in that I forgot is now at this current date, he's 34 years old.
Yeah.
Like, so he's still super young.
Yeah, he was very young when he did this and ruined his life and his family's life. Mm-hmm. But after that terrible, terrible tale, do you have a Florida man for us?
I do. I wanted to find something a little more lighthearted.
Yeah, that's probably for the best.
Which, it's not super, it's part of it's lighthearted, part of it's not.
All right.
It doesn't really have a title, unfortunately.
Okay.
But a man from Texas who's 20 years old was arrested in Bradenton, Florida, which is just north of us, for a felony charge of engaging in a lewd act with a minor. So he was 20. He was probably hooking up with a 17-year-old.
Right.
But on his report that he had to fill out in his paperwork when he got arrested, he wrote down his religion as being a redneck.
Wow. That's the most Florida fucking thing I've ever heard.
And so, you know, he's a member of the, quote, redneck faith. And it said, "While certainly no experts on spiritual manners until today were unaware of the existence of a religion being practiced in the South called redneck."
I hate this man so much.
And that's about it. It was really short, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah, that is really funny. That's so dumb. Mm-hmm. I love people, but they're also the worst.
Yeah.
Well, we hope that you guys enjoyed our dark tale for you this week. We know that everyone and their mother has covered this case, but we still find it really interesting, so we wanted to take it on.
Yeah, definitely. And again, we went back to a really sad one, but you gotta have those every once in a while.
Yeah, murder is sad, so
it really is.
You gotta cover the really sad ones sometimes, really fucked up ones. Yeah.
So please remember to reach out to us on social media.
Yes.
You can tell us what cases you want to hear. And we're at Crime Binge everywhere. Please rate and review us. We would love some more 5-star reviews from y'all.
Yeah. And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.